story that affects every American when you, a friend, or a loved one goes to the doctor. Do you know how good your doctor is? These stories seem to come right out of a medical TV drama. Doctors operate on the wrong body part, or the wrong patient gets the wrong medicine, but these errors are becoming a scary reality in America. The medical journal BMJ says medical error kills more than 250,000 Americans every year. Medical error is now the third leading cause of deaths in the United States.
So the medical errors in hospitals and other healthcare facilities are incredibly common and may now be the third leading cause of death in the United States.
Welcome back to the Deem Show. We got a double treat for you guys. Jim Marlowe, Sheikh Mustafa. Now, if you guys don't know, if you haven't already, sick and tired of being sick and tired, we had you talking about your history. For those that don't know, Dr. Mercola, you were the chief
nutritionist. Dr. Mercola's Optimal Wellness Center from 2000 to 2007.
Helping people optimal health.
And because of the popularity of his website, during that period, we were probably the busiest nutrition-based health center in the country, certainly one of the busiest, and had a lot of experience helping people to improve their health through nutrition.
Now, you're one of the movers and shakers in the community. People come to you, they say, look, Sheikh, should we do this with our families? What's with the C-section? Many health issues. I'm having, name some of the things that people, their concerns, and they come to you for advice, and you got to give them advice.
Yeah, people want to know. I mean, Muslims ask me all the time in the community, and even general people, what's going on with the birthing industry? You know, should we consider alternative forms of, you know, home birthing? Are C-sections becoming, you know, just routine? Is it something that we need? What do we do with vaccinations? The vaccination schedule seems very long. We're not really encouraged by our medical practitioners to eat nutrition. There's really not too that much focus on health. It's just kind of just go to the doctor. Should we take all these pills? Should we do medical marijuana? We get all these sorts of questions.
I think this is extremely important. Personally, all the other movers and shakers in the community. What are some of them that are out there that you're very close friends with? You guys have the MJA conference that comes together,
yes.
And you guys decide these things. Is it so? Many of the Yasser Qadis, the Omar Suleimans.
Yeah.
Who else? What are some names that are out there?
There's Imam Siraj, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, Sheikh Yasser Qadi, Imam Zaid Shakir.
They get the same types of questions, right?
They definitely get the same types of questions. We got the Fiqh Council of North America. We got AMJA. We got different scholars councils. And people are going to them as like a source for kind of getting some more information on these issues. And they want to know, what does Islam say about this, right? Where do you, like, what kind of guidance does Islam give you? And what should Muslims be doing as good Muslims?
Mm-hmm. And we know that you guys are specializing also in protecting humanity and helping humanity and, you know, delivering the message of the purpose of life, protecting people from the spiritual toxins that are out there. But nowadays, Jim can testify, there are so many health toxins. 50% of people living today will have cancer. 1 in 3 will die from it. Almost 70% of people are obese, overweight. Skyrocketing rates of heart disease, obesity, diabetes. So this is something that definitely, I usually mention that, hey, all that wonderful work you're doing, it's going to get shut down if your health gets shut down. And do we have it wrong here? Because a lot of times we'll say, okay, go see the expert, you know, the guy in the white coat. See, he knows best. But we're seeing some things that sometimes, you know, there's a conflict here. Some things that he had mentioned that people aren't taking the matter of nutrition seriously from their regular doctors. Some are saying, okay, you know, they have a lack of education in this field. What are your thoughts on this, Jim?
Nutrition always matters. And some people are more sensitive to their nutrition than other people. But what you're eating and drinking every day is going to affect the structure and functioning of your body sooner or later. And the better you get your nutrition, the more you eat what Eddie knows, I like to keep it simple, the more people eat high quality real food, and the more faithful they avoid all the fake foods that dominate in our junk food, fast food, convenience food, American culture, the easier they make it for their bodies to be healthier. And My intention for my own health for many years has been to honor my body, to honor the miracle of my life, the wondrous, amazing miracle of life, with the best quality food that God and nature have to offer. I was on the other side of health for the first 20 years of my life. I was chronically ill. I discussed that in the first time I was on the Dean Show. But at the age of 20, I woke up to wanting to take responsibility for my own health, and the only way I knew how to begin to do that was to educate myself. And I began to educate myself about nutrition, and I applied what I was learning. And after just a week, just 1 week of some significant improvements as far as subtracting fake food and eating more real food, I felt better, and I felt significantly better. I was able to think more clearly. Before I improved my nutrition, I didn't like to read, because I would read something and I would, a moment after I read it, I forget what I just read, and I'd have to reread over and over again. And I kind of learned to live in a constant state of brain fog. I didn't see it as brain fog until the fog started to lift as I improved my nutrition. And then eventually over the years, I came to learn that the brain is the most nutrient-sensitive organ of the human body. And to this day, when I'm giving people nutrition and health-building guidance, I would say at least 4 out of 5 people I work with will admit to experiencing brain fog, lack of clarity, poor memory, even people in their 20s and 30s. This is not older people. This is people of all ages. 4 out of 5 people I work with will admit to having brain fog to some extent. And like my experience, the very first health benefit I realized from improved nutrition was the brain fog started to lift and I could think more clearly. And that's what I hear from almost everybody that I work with to this day who had some noticeable brain fog. And as they improved their nutrition, even though maybe their main goal was to have more energy and to support healing from some injury or some other condition they have, or maybe they wanted to have nicer skin, or maybe they just wanted to get rid of chronic aches and pains, have better digestion and elimination. It's amazing to me and very enjoyable to hear that almost everybody that I work with experiences a lifting of the brain fog to a very significant extent, sometimes dramatically, within a week or two of following their nutrition plan.
Now, how much do you guys discuss this at your annual meetings, FIC meetings? Do you guys sit and do you have a portion dedicated to good health? Because we know, you know, according to this dean, that one of the blessings we take for granted is our health.
Yes.
You guys talk a lot about health?
Yeah, I mean, no, we don't actually.
Unfortunately,
no, we don't. We don't. It's not a topic that comes up very much. It comes up very seldom. And, you know, there is a principle. There's a statement of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, where he said, you know, لا ضرر ولا ضرار. This principle comes up a lot, which basically means that there is no causing of harm and there should be no receiving of harm. So you try to avert harm from doing harm and from receiving harm as much as possible. So we kind of use this principle in trying to decide certain cases and issues that are presented to us. But what generally ends up happening is every time there's a medical issue, we kind of look at it from the Islamic interpretive side on the text. And then we say, you know what, whatever medical research is presented to us, or we need to go, you know, call up a local Muslim doctor or something like that and say, hey, guy went to medical school. Whatever he says, we're going to take that information that we have and we're going to build our fatwa, or we're going to build our verdict, or, you know, our ruling, or what Islam says about it based upon the information that we're getting.
Yeah.
And the problem is sometimes, I mean, I've started to realize now that sometimes the information that we're presented with is just wrong. It's either very poor, shoddy research, or it was just something that was believed by, you know, the medical industry for a very long time, and it turned out that it was not accurate. And we built an Islamic ruling upon that, and that's obviously very problematic. So we generally don't talk about it a lot. We try to just outsource it. We just say, you know what, just go ask your local doctor. You know, and like you were talking about, it's the guy in the lab coat, you know, so he's the guy who has all the answers. So that's pretty much what's happening at the moment right now.
I walked into a pediatrician's office not too long ago, well, about a year ago. I walked in and I observed around me a waiting room full of kids. And to my left, kids eating potato chips. To my right, the kids drinking a Coke. Straight ahead, the other kids eating some cookies and other fake food. Mm. But you're bringing your kid there for an ailment because he's having a health issue, but right in front of you, you're not addressing the main issue. What do you think, Jim?
I think that's a prime example of one of the things that's wrong with modern medicine is that they don't give any real attention to nutrition's influence on the body.
And don't they learn it in medical school?
Not at all, because that's not part of the business model. And this is one of the things we were talking about earlier, that there's a fundamental question that really needs to be asked to help people have more understanding about why things are the way they are. And the question is to ask, why are things the way they are? Why is modern medicine practiced the way it's practiced with such a heavy emphasis on pharmaceutical drugs and surgical procedures and other practices that people can't do for themselves? And it's all about what the doctor does for you or what the doctor does to you, but they really don't give any attention to empowering people to help you better know how to take care of yourself. Now, there are some exceptions. There are what I call some real doctors who do that. Some real doctors who actually do teach patients how to improve their health by improving their nutrition and other aspects of self-care. But that's not what dominates, unfortunately. What dominates are medical doctors who, no matter what your problem is, no matter what's going on, here's the solution. It's a prescription, or it's a series of prescription drugs. And there's a place for that, but there's no drug that was ever developed that addresses the cause of any health problem. Not even antibiotics. Some people might say, well, antibiotics address the cause of the problem because they directly kill germs that can cause infection. But wait a second, human beings have an immune system. Your immune system is supposed to be the main protection against any type of infection. So when someone gets an infection, consider that their immune system was too weak to do what it needed to do. The immune system got compromised somehow. And antibiotics can certainly kill germs and clear up an infection in the short run. But antibiotics also, they have some pretty serious other effects. They can damage your intestinal ecology, kill off friendly bacteria in your intestines, and set you up for all kind of intestinal problems, everything from a condition known as candidiasis, which is intestinal yeast, and then fungus overgrowth, which causes problems with digestive distress. And antibiotics also, they not only have this adverse effect and killing the probiotic friendly bacteria that everybody needs for healthy digestive and intestinal health, they also can weaken your own immune system response. You know, in my years at Dr. McCullough's clinic, we had so many patients come there who had in their history, recurrent infections, respiratory, bladder, sinus infections, constantly treated with antibiotics. And this would go on for years with some people. You know, the antibiotics were not addressing the cause of their problems, because it was only they take the antibiotics to clear up the infection, and then, you know, a month later or 2 months later, they get another infection treated with more antibiotics. Consider that this is not medical science. This is a business model.
Let's hold off. We're going to take a break. Very exciting show. Much to learn. We need the movers and shakers out there. We got one of them, so we can get enlightened, we can get informed, make the right decisions, the right choices. We'll be right back with more here on The Dean Show.
And don't forget, subscribe right now.
Back here on The Dean Show with Chief Nutritionist Jim Marlowe. It's going on 40 years. It's going on 40 years. You've been I always say it, you say, no, it's not quite yet. You're almost there.
I started studying nutrition the age of 20 in 1977. So next year will be my 40th year of studying nutrition and the other fundamentals of health. And I'm going to continue to study it for as long as I'm around, because there's no end to learning. No matter how much you know or how much you think you know, there's no end to learning. And I hope to continue to learn and grow for as long as I'm around.
God willing, we can all do that. Grow, that's the part. There was a great statement talking about, you know, intelligent person. One part of learning is relearning. Sometimes you learn some things and you have to get that out of your system and relearn the right information. All of us, sometimes we are susceptible to that. What do you think about what he was saying? We know there's a great misuse of antibiotics today. You know, there is a benefit in it, but there's a great misuse. Every time you go, I know myself, I get sick, give me an anti. But then he's talking about the consequences over misuse. And some of these other things he was saying, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, initially, it's starting to make sense, right? I've been looking into this as well. But, you know, when I first started to hear this in the beginning, the average person thinks, hold on, this something doesn't seem right about this. How can the entire industry that we have so much trust in, you know, we have so much faith in, we know so many doctors, and they seem like good people. They seem like intelligent people. They seem like people who know what they're doing. They did good in school in order to get into the medical school. They paid all this money, or, you know, got some loans, you know, to do all of this. Their goal was to do good. So how can this be like some giant conspiracy that's taking place? You know, that's the initial reaction that takes place, until, you know, you start reading more and you start, you know, listening. So, well, wait a minute, this person may be onto something, and other people may be onto something, you know. So that's why I want to put the questions out there that a lot of people are going to be asking themselves. Like, you know what, you know, you're telling me that these antibiotics and everything that people are prescribing, this has been going on for decades now. So many people involved. Is this some kind of giant conspiracy? You know, I think that's an important question to ask, and we should get like a response to that.
Are you some kind of conspiracy theorist?
No, just a truth seeker and a truth teller. As I was saying before, a very important question to ask is, why are things the way they are? And when you go down that path, and you go down all the way to find the origins of modern medicine, you find that the interests that actually had the biggest influence on modern medicine and why it's so drug-oriented, the interests, these were very powerful, very wealthy interests over 100 years ago that saw, unfortunately, it's hard for people to believe this. If you have a conscience, you have passion, or at the very least respect for truth and not lying and not harming other people. It's hard for people to understand that there were very wealthy, very powerful interests at the beginning of the 20th century who used their wealth, their power, and their influence to basically shape a medical system that would serve their business interest even more. But they saw disease and illness, and even more so the fear of disease and illness, as a marketplace to be exploited.
This is all documented. Someone
can go and
research it and find out.
Yes, I would suggest that for anybody viewing this episode of The Dean Show, that you go to YouTube, and there, I'll give people a number of presentations to check out. A really good starting point is a presentation by G. Edward Griffin, who's an investigative journalist, a truth seeker, and truth teller. He wrote a book in the 1970s called World Without Cancer, and he's written many books over the years on other subjects too. But he's got a wonderful presentation from 2005 on YouTube. It's called The Science and Politics of Cancer. And he gets into, within his presentation, the origins of modern medicine and the people that had the biggest influence on the way medicine is practiced to this day. Most people don't ask this question. Why are things the way they are? Most doctors don't ask this question. I have a sister who's a medical doctor, and she went to medical school with good intentions, but she didn't know who was the dominant influence on the medical school curriculum when she went there. But she went through 4 years of medical school without 1 minute of nutrition. It wasn't part of her curriculum. How could you go through medical school without having one class or even 1 minute giving attention to what people put into their bodies every day. You know, of course what we put into our bodies every day is going to affect the way we feel.
I mean, the average person would assume that this is all naturally part of the medical school curriculum. How can your doctor not know about nutrition? The assumption is they know everything about the human body and they know how to take care of it.
That's the propaganda that we get, you know, before you change your diet, check with your doctor. Before you take a vitamin supplement, check with your doctor. Before you start an exercise program, check with your doctor, as if they know about this. They don't learn about this.
Hold on, how about the food pyramid?
Yeah. Well, I think it was so appropriate that a pyramid was used to convey the government dietary guidelines, because ultimately what is a pyramid, or one of the functions of a pyramid? It's an Egyptian tomb, right? What an appropriate structure to use for conveying dietary guidelines from the government.
But what people would say, okay, but these are the biggest organizations, FDA, CDC, these World Health Organizations that the doctors go back to. There's a consensus on the amount of sugar intake, cholesterol, and for a long time, I don't know if it's changed now, but we were throwing out the yolk. Mm-hmm. Remember the yolk? And we eat just the egg whites. So they were onto something, were they? But is that changing now, or is it still those recommendations? Are they?
Well, there is no one specific nutritional practice that is going to be right for everybody. For many people, the best part of the egg is the yolk. For other people, they do better with just the white. And I think for most people, they do better just eating the whole egg, just to address what you brought up, Eddie. But I think we need to be persistent in addressing the origins of modern medicine. Who really shaped the way modern medicine is to this day? And when you go down that path, you find out that one of the most powerful interests was not a doctor, was not a scientist, was not a researcher, but the wealthiest man in the world at that time, the person who was considered the first billionaire in the world, John D. Rockefeller. He was the man. He and his people, they set about taking over the medical school curriculum and ultimately using the conventional medical establishment to serve their business interest.
We're going to go ahead and take a break. More to talk about. We're talking about the history now. This is very important. We're going to get more into it when we come back here on the Dean Show. Don't go anywhere.
And don't forget, subscribe right now.
Back here on the Dean Show. Let me get you in on this. We left off with some of the history. Did you know a lot about this? Have you heard?
No, I mean I kind of had some suspicions that, you know what, there's obviously an economic aspect involved in kind of the medical industry. It's a very big industry. You make a lot of money, you know, keeping people kind of, you know, giving them pills and getting them surgeries and all that stuff. There's a good aspect to, you know, helping people, but obviously there's economic aspects to it, and also, you know, there's conflict of interest sometimes, because, you know, the goal of a medical professional, the goal of a doctor is supposed to be to help the patients to get wellness, to get healthy, you know, to get out of the issues that they have, and to maintain a good, healthy body, and, you know, you're able to function. But there's that conflict between, you know what, you're a surgeon, you know, I want to upgrade my Mercedes, you know, I want the latest model. If I don't give this guy surgery, I'm going to be making, you know, $10,000, $20,000 less. Just add a little extra surgery in there. You know, I can make an extra $20,000, $10,000, whatever it is. Little tiny thing, you know, someone's going to birth. Maybe the baby would have come out naturally. If you just go straight to C-section, just say, you know, we recommend you just go straight to C-section. And the person's like, well, you know, the guy in the white lab coat said that, so we should go ahead and do it. You can make some extra money, and that's just part of human nature. So I think that the medical industry, or even the medical experts, they're not exempt from these type of, you know, human frailties, human weaknesses, and that's concerning. That's very concerning.
So we can say we shouldn't be naive.
Question. We need to question. We absolutely have to question, and that's something that we're taught as Muslims. We're taught in Islam that, you know what, should always be searching for the truth in everything. You know, mm-hmm. So God created us with the mind for a reason. right? Yeah. And we're supposed to try and find the truth wherever that truth lies.
Yeah.
So you should be willing and open to listen and to kind of hear, wait, what's going on? And kind of, especially when a mistake has been made in the past. You know, the Prophet, peace be upon him, he actually said that a believer is not bitten from the same hole twice. So once you find out that, you know what, if there's a misdiagnosis or your doctor did something that wasn't needed to be done, or you learn in the past that, you know what, some medical information that was mainstream, it was taught, this is absolute fact, and then it's completely overturned 10 years later, 20 years later, and like, I can't believe everyone bought into that idea. Like, that's crazy. They thought that this was correct. You have to be a little bit more skeptical so that you're not bitten from that same hole twice. You got to learn your lesson.
Tell them, yeah, that makes sense. That's what we're taught. Be truth seekers. You were talking about some more of the history?
Yeah, and resources for people to learn for themselves. Besides the presentation on the science and politics of cancer by G. Edward Griffin, I also recommend that people check out on YouTube, a video presentation from an investigative journalist by the name of James Corbett. Some people may be familiar with the Corbett Report, but he's got a wonderfully researched, well-researched presentation on Rockefeller medicine, is what he calls it. It's about a 45-minute presentation on basically what I brought up a little while ago about the origins of modern medicine. Who was the biggest influence on the medical school curriculum? Who's the biggest influence on the way medicine is practiced to this day? And I don't want people to think that I'm entirely critical of the whole medical establishment. I think modern medicine is at their best in urgent care, emergency care, immediate care situations, trauma medicine. They can do some wondrous things, and that's where they're at their best. But that's a relatively small part of medical care in this country. The vast majority of medical care is treating people with chronic health problems. Chronic health problems, degenerative conditions, arthritis and diabetes and, you know, cancer and heart disease and neurological conditions like multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease. Conditions that ultimately manifest because of too many toxins and not enough nutrients, and it's just only a matter of time before the body begins to dysfunction and begins to break down. Where we dysfunction and where we break down, that's determined by our individual strengths and weaknesses. And there's certainly a genetic influence there. But, you know, exposure to toxins like mercury and arsenic might cause neurological degeneration in one person, immune system damage in another person, you know, and ultimately cancer or heart disease in another person. So there's a spectrum of possibilities there for how ultimately the consequences of exposure to environmental toxins will affect someone's health. But other resources besides the G. Edward Griffin presentation and James Corbett on Rockefeller medicine, John Rappaport, who is one of my heroes. He's a truth seeker and a truth teller. He's an investigative journalist, especially in regard to medical issues. John Rappaport has his own website called No More Fake News, which I read almost on a daily basis, but he's got his own presentations. If you Google John Rappaport and Rockefeller medicine and CDC fraud, FDA fraud, he's written about these issues a lot. And also a doctor by the name of Matthias Rath, he's a German doctor who has some wonderful presentations. He was one of the doctors that Ty Bollinger interviewed extensively in his series on the truth about cancer. And of course, I'm all for people watching the Ty Bollinger Truth About Cancer series, especially episode one, in which he addresses exactly what I'm talking about, is why are things the way they are? Why is cancer treatment in America as practiced by the conventional medical staff, why is it only really oriented toward the poisons euphemistically called chemotherapy, and I refuse to just call it chemotherapy without prefacing it with the poisons euphemistically known as chemotherapy, because those drugs are poisons, and radiation. Chemo and radiation with no attention to natural therapies, alternative, proven therapies, and there's a lot of information in the marketplace about that. There's a wonderful book by a researcher, consumer patient advocate by the name of Tanya Harder Pierce. She wrote a book a number of years ago called Outsmart Your Cancer, which covers natural therapies for helping people to overcome cancer that the conventional medical establishment gives no attention to. But getting back to Dr. Matthias Rath's presentation on YouTube, if you just Google Dr. Matthias Rath, eradicating heart disease is that's his specialty, that would be a very good starting point for people to actually take in information from people that have actually learned the history of the origins of modern medicine. And so I think a lot of people who go to medical school with very good intentions and they want to help people, I think their good intentions are to a very large extent exploited and even betrayed. And as far as what they're learning, I mean, the conventional medical establishment is, there's no doubt, it's a huge, very expensive infrastructure that has been built up. It's in place, and they need customers. No money is generated for the medical industrial complex until someone gets sick or injured. And because they only give lip service to prevention and promoting health, but we don't have any real healthcare system in this country. You know what it really is, if you think things through logically, with the way things are set up, what's called healthcare in this country, it's really disease treatment or injury treatment payment insurance is what healthcare insurance really is. It doesn't. The premiums that people pay on an ongoing basis, it does very little, if any, to anything to ensure their health, but it's disease and or injury treatment payment insurance. You've been in a car accident, you've developed some disease, and now it's all about who's going to pay the bill. How does that ensure your health? How is that good for your health? The most practical health insurance we could have is to give faithful attention to putting the best quality food, the best nourishing ourselves with the best quality food and drink that's available to us, and getting the rest of our self-care right because we're giving faithful attention to the other fundamentals of health. Our breath, the quality of our breath, the quality and quantity of water we're drinking every day, getting a good night's sleep. Moving your body, moving, activity, exercise is of course a fundamental of health.
These are some basic things to key health. 50% of the people we talked about cancer will have cancer. 1 in 3 will die from it. So this is obviously something at these sessions with other scholars that I think is something that should be prioritized.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think from what he's saying?
Yeah, I mean these are very important questions that are being raised. I mean we get people want to know I got cancer. Should I go for chemo? I'm kind of scared.
That's a big one.
I'm kind of scared, but I'm a Muslim. What does God want me to do? I mean, does He want me? I got the money. Should I go ahead and just do the chemo because I might be able to live longer? And how does that how does that tie into the decree of God? Everyone's going to die at a certain time, anyways. Or should I go with something more natural? These are questions that we do need to start discussing, and we're usually just getting one side of the story, and that side of the story is the medical professionals in these clinics. Mm-hmm. So hearing this is very important, I think, for all Muslim scholars to kind of weigh and say, wait a minute, maybe we need to rethink the advice that we generally give and say, this is outside of our realm. Just go ask your doctor. This plays a major role. As people, as human beings.
Yeah, and there's a big difference between truth and propaganda. And my advice to people is to be very skeptical about any health information or any information you hear on disease treatment from the mainstream media, because the mainstream media is basically owned by corporate America and these interests that are part of the medical industrial complex. I think the mainstream media, television and radio and newspapers, they all are used to convey the propaganda to the public, promoting that America has the best medical care system in the world, and that people should go into the medical establishment for anything to do with health. But I recently shared with Eddie something that was never brought out in the mainstream media. But this is from one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, July 26th edition, in the year 2000, of the Journal of the American Medical Association. There was a comprehensive article written by Dr. Barbara Starfield, who had all of the most prestigious medical establishment credentials. And the title of her article was, "Is U.S. Healthcare the Best in the World?" And within that article, she stated a number of facts, such as every year, as of July 26, 2000, every year in the United States, at least 225,000 people are actually killed from medical treatment. And over 100,000 people are killed from taking FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs as prescribed. This is not people overdosing. These are not mistakes. This is people dying from taking FDA-approved drugs as prescribed. Again, the citation is Dr. Barbara Starfield, Journal of the American Medical Association, July 26, 2000. The mainstream media never addressed this. In fact, Barbara Starfield was interviewed by John Rappaport a number of years after she published this article, and he asked her, "Were you ever contacted by any government agency that's in charge of, you know, protecting the public health, the FDA, the CDC, about your information and the fact that almost 250,000 people as of 2000 are it's acknowledged. This is not controversial. Almost 250,000 people are actually being killed by medical care in this country." And she said, "No." No one had any interest in looking into this and what can we do to improve medical care so there's less people being killed by FDA-approved drugs. So when you learn about this, and the truth is there, the information is there, but if it's not supportive of the medical industry propaganda, you don't hear about it at all, or you only hear about it, you know, one time, and then there's no follow-up investigation at all. But the truth is there, and ultimately we have to be very careful who we trust, what we buy into, and is the medical industry are they trustworthy? Is the FDA trustworthy? Is the CDC trustworthy? Or was Ralph Nader, who ran for president a number of years ago, was he onto something when he said the real issue about what's going on in this country is that corporate America has taken over the government? They've taken over government agencies, and the government agencies, which were originally created to serve public interests, are serving corporate interests, serving very powerful entrenched business interests.
We're almost out of time. Your last, some of the
yeah. I mean, from what you know, this is very alarming. You know, hearing more and more of this, the more I hear, Muslims are concerned about people dying. They're concerned about, you know, the children in Palestine who are being killed, the oppression in that area, in Syria, in Burma, in all different parts. But this is just another thing now to add to the list. I mean, if people are dying because of federally approved drugs that they're taking or medical treatment that they're going, many people still have this perception that, you know, America is the best place in the world for healthcare, and therefore, hey, it's better than India, or it's better than Nigeria or something like that. So this is the place where you'd want to be. But if we're harming people, and if there's some type of harm going on, or people are even being killed, we have a responsibility as Muslims, and we have a responsibility as Muslim leaders as well, to kind of look into this in whatever capacity we can and start asking the questions, becoming at least a little bit more skeptical, kind of open our minds and say, you know what, someone does need to investigate this more. We do need more education on this, and we need to rethink this entire thing.
You mentioned C-section before. I have a recommendation for people who would like to be more educated about what goes on in regard to hospital births. There was a wonderful documentary that was done a number of years ago called The Business of Being Born.
Yes, you've
seen that?
I've seen that, yes.
I strongly recommend that to all parents who are about to have a child. But one of the basic lessons of watching this very well done documentary is that the more medical treatment people accept, the more then they need. It's like the way the medical industry is, it's like they're very good at perpetuating more business for themselves.
And many people have been affected by this. This is a great example of the C-section. You want to have, you know, more kids, but now because you've had one or two, now...
Yeah, once you get one C-section, then you get what's called VBAC, you know, yeah. Vaginal birth after C-section, and it's very difficult to be able to have a normal, natural birth after it happens once. So there's a lot of, you know, Muslim sisters in the community that are saying, you know, well, what should we do? And where do you draw the line? Where do you make the decision between, okay, I'm afraid for my child. I don't want my potential child, you know, it's kind of be coming out. I don't want it to be harmed. At the same time, it might be more harmed by going into this procedure. So it's
skyrocketed. It's like over 50-60% C-section. So this is another great example. We're out of time. We only touched the surface, but that's another great example of maybe profits over people. Any closing comments for the audience? They might be confused. They think, what, do I abandon medical care? What, I mean, do I, it's some people for hearing this for the first time, what advice do you give?
I think what I heard from Jim made sense is that, you know what, it's not about abandoning medical care. It's kind of understanding where it functions very well and where there are some gray areas and there are some question marks, and we need to kind of, you know, reanalyze what our understanding of medical care is. Like you said, emergency care and those type of things. Generally, I mean, if someone breaks their arm or something like that, you would still advise them, go to the doctor. Don't you know, start eating some more nutrition, or, you know, don't stay at home and say it's just going to heal itself. You know, it's okay. So there are aspects where it's pretty clear cut, right? There are, you know, there's some good research out there. There's good care. But then there are other aspects where there's gray areas. History has told us that we've made several mistakes and several U-turns and all of that. So my advice to everyone is just to kind of, you know, before dismissing everything as a conspiracy theory, there may be a few people who are very extreme out there, but, you know, people who are kind of knowledgeable, they have an understanding, they have research, people from within the system, within the medical community, when they're asking the questions, we should be willing to listen. We should do a little bit more research. You know, people... like you said, we shouldn't always trust the mainstream media. We don't, you know, more people have woken up. They're not always trusting the mainstream media for political issues. They realize the corruption in that field. So they're like, we're going to find alternative avenues, right? Yes. So this could very well be something similar where we need to find alternate knowledge sources where we can actually kind of get the real story of things.
Jim, would you be willing, if they had one of their meetings with some of the movers and shakers and they wanted to learn more on this topic, would you come and sit with some of the experts in this field?
Of course. I'm enthusiastic and glad to share what I have to offer with anybody who's interested in nutrition and health truth and empowering themselves and other people to know how to better take care of themselves. You know, doctors do have their role and they have their place. My advice would be for people to seek out natural medicine doctors. Doctors, it could be an MD or it might be a DO or a naturopath, but seek out doctors who actually focus more on promoting health than treating the symptoms of disease or illness. But there's a lot of natural medicine doctors around, not nearly as many as the doctors who are little more than legalized drug pushers, especially in regard to chronic health problems. But there are some real doctors around. And ultimately, the most important doctor to honor, to respect, and to support is the doctor within yourself. The innate intelligence that we all have, our body knows how to be healthy, it wants to be healthy, it's always trying to be healthy. If we cut ourselves, it heals, but it doesn't heal magically. We need to be getting our nutrition and our self-care at least right enough to support the healing potential that we all have inside of us. But we all do have an inner doctor, and that's the doctor that I think we should... honor and respect and support most of all.
The immune system is powerful. It's a gift from God that He's given us.
Not just the immune system, but our the entire system. Body. Yeah. You know, the whole body is one. We function as a whole organism, and the immune system is just one part of our biology. when you're on a health building nutrition plan, you know, nutrition, good nutrition feeds every cell of your body. You know, when you take a drug may have one effect on one aspect of your biology to suppress a particular symptom that, you know, improves a blood test or makes maybe reduces a symptom a little bit in the short run, but it's not good for your whole body. But you know, when you eat a truly nourishing meal, you're feeding your brain cells, you're nourishing your heart, your liver, your kidneys, your lungs, your immune system, your endocrine system, all of you is getting nourished. And you know, as I mentioned previously, that our approach at the Optimal Wellness Center, Dr. McCullough's clinic, in the glory days of the Optimal Wellness Center, was the approach that we had was really to teach people how to build their health through nutrition, and the best way to overcome what you could call the darkness of disease is to turn on the light of health.
Beautiful.
Well, build health.
With that, thank you guys so much for being with us.
Thank you, Eddie.
We'll do this again sometime in the future. Thank you, guys. Hope you benefited. We'll see you next time. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
And don't forget, subscribe right now.